I wanted to talk about what Wellen syndrome is and what it is not, how Wellen syndrome can help us clinically, and how to optimally use the information it provides. The beauty of Wellen syndrome is that when criteria for the diagnosis are met, this provides one of those few instances in which a particular ECG pattern strongly correlates with coronary anatomy, in that it is highly predictive of a critical narrowing in the proximal LAD, that is, in the proximal left anterior descending coronary artery. The goal of recognizing Wellen syndrome is to prompt the need for coronary revascularization, and in so doing, to hopefully prevent a large anterior infarction from occurring. First point, the diagnosis of Wellen syndrome depends on recognizing a critical proximal LAD stenosis before significant infarction has occurred. If on the ECG there are already anterior Q waves or anterior QS complexes that indicate infarction, then you are too late because anterior infarction has already occurred. Sequential ECG manifestations that are seen with acute coronary occlusion often begin with hyperacute T waves that go on to evolve into acute ST elevation in those leads that overlie the area of infarction, usually with reciprocal ST segment depression being seen in one or more of the remaining lead areas. Following acute occlusion of a major coronary artery, there may be reopening with reperfusion of the culprit artery. This reperfusion may be the result of treatment by PCI, percutaneous coronary intervention, it may be the result of thrombolytic therapy, or it may occur spontaneously. Not commonly appreciated is that some patients have a stuttering course in which the culprit artery may close, but then spontaneously reopen, either to stay open or to once again reocclude, sometimes opening and closing spontaneously a number of times until finally remaining either open or closed. This explains a phenomenon that may occasionally be seen, in which the patient has chest pain, which is accompanied by ST elevation, but within minutes, the chest pain and ST elevation spontaneously and completely resolve. If the period of complete coronary occlusion is brief enough, there may be no lasting cardiac damage, and troponin might not even be elevated. The only way we can sometimes confirm that a brief period of complete coronary occlusion did occur is by development of reperfusion changes on ECG. That is, development of deepening T-wave inversion in those lead areas that showed ST elevation while the patient had chest pain. Point number two, the sequence of events that I have just described is essentially what happens with Wellen syndrome. The patient reports a recent episode of chest pain that spontaneously resolved. By the time the ECG is obtained, there is that characteristic steep downsloping of the T wave with terminal negativity that may be shallow or deep in one or more of the anterior leads. The LAD was briefly occluded, but the LAD spontaneously reopened before significant cardiac damage occurred. So by the time we are looking at the ECG, there are no infarction Q waves, troponin is no more than minimally elevated, and there is no more than minimal, if any, ST elevation in those anterior leads that show the characteristic T-wave deepening of coronary reperfusion. Cardiac cath, much sooner rather than later, with probable need for more permanent reperfusion, is indicated for this patient who almost certainly has a tight proximal LAD lesion at high risk for reocclusion unless something is done. Point number three has already been suggested within point number two, namely that the history is an essential part of the diagnosis of Wellen syndrome. There should be a history of recent chest pain that has resolved at the time that the diagnostic ECG is recorded. Obtaining this history from the patient of recent now resolved chest pain reduces the chance of confusing Wellen syndrome with other entities that might produce T-wave inversion. Point number four relates to the characteristic shape of the T-wave inversion seen with Wellen syndrome. Two ECG patterns of T-wave inversion have been described. Many clinicians interpret the pattern of deep symmetric anterior T-wave inversion as one expression of Wellen syndrome. I feel this is a mistake because there are other causes of this ECG finding and Wellen syndrome is only one of them. Symmetric T-wave inversion may be seen with milder, non-critical coronary disease without a tight proximal LAD narrowing. It may be seen with severe LVH and with apical or hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. And it may also be seen with non-cardiac causes such as a CNS bleed, coma, or following a seizure. In contrast, with the right clinical history, the finding of slight anterior ST elevation but without anterior Q waves with the distinct ECG pattern in one or more leads of steep T wave downsloping that leads into terminal negativity is far more specific for predicting a tight proximal LAD narrowing on CATH. I'll conclude with two caveats. Significant LVH on ECG to the point that you see ST-T wave repolarization changes of LV strain is notorious for simulating a T wave picture that may be mistaken for Welland's T waves. Therefore, use caution if considering a diagnosis of Welland syndrome when the ECG shows marked LVH. Finally, remember that Welland's T waves in reality reflect spontaneous reperfusion that follows a very brief period of coronary artery occlusion. But if the period of total coronary occlusion is longer and definite myocardial infarction has occurred, then you will often see T-wave inversion that looks identical to the pattern of Welland's T-waves.